I'll be honest, this one was a tough, interesting conversation. Obviously, as always, I'll let you be the judge. And there's nuance and there's complexity, and people are never as simple as we want to make them. And my guest today, Tony, starts with this premise of the importance of family and the nuclear family. That's kind of his most important belief and value. He thinks that maintaining that, carrying that forward is the key to society. It's the key to helping people understand how to be good humans and live good lives and all the things, which at its core, I think is a really good thing to discuss and think about, because there's a lot of importance to family. There's a lot of good that comes from family. But as you'll hear throughout this conversation, and you know, we discussed, debated, tried to make sense of, there's a lot layered into that. It's a loaded statement. Tony has a lot of views about where society is going, and you know, to oversimplify it, kind of the woke culture and how things have changed when he was a kid in the 80s, and whether it be around race issues or gender issues or all sorts of different things. This belief that things used to be better and we need to get back to that, which isn't a novel thought, right? We hear that a lot in today's world. But I'd like to hope, on the one hand, this is a good example of a conversation where we really challenge that and we explore it. What do we mean it used to be better? Did it actually used to be better? And why are we so confident in that? And how are we sure that we're seeing it accurately? Just because we were kids and life was good when we were that age, does that mean it was good for everybody? But at the same time, let's look at it from the other side too and see maybe there were some good things from the 80s or from back then that we do want to carry forward. So probably the biggest theme of this conversation was nuance. It's not as simple as just to say, you know, Tony's a monster because he wants to go back to the 80s and he thinks we should be able to call people all sorts of bad, you know, words, and that we should go back to a time where maybe women, gay people, black people weren't treated as well, right? It's not that simple, but it's also not that simple to go the other way and say, we were all monsters back then. Everything was wrong with society then, and we need to totally change it. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, obviously. I don't know necessarily the right way to handle these conversations and some of these words and these ideas and these insights that people have. My instinct is to just listen and to try and make sense and ask questions and try and get to a better place. I don't know if that's where we're getting to or not. I do appreciate Tony for being on, for sharing his views, for having this discussion, and take a listen and see what you guys think. All right, Tony, thanks so much for making the time today. Very excited to talk to you and appreciate it. I will jump right in because I like to get right into the conversation and ask you, what's the value, the belief, the perspective that's really important to you?
Well, I really think it is family. And if I look at it this way, if you take any problem on a societal level, and we'll stick with the society that we live in, and you deconstruct that down to the basics of that problem, regardless of what the problem is, you will find a poor family foundation. And if you look at where we're at today, that, you know, especially, and you look, appear to be more my age, so I'm a Gen Xer.
See the grays, you can see, you feel it.
Yeah, yeah, you got the little white Krispies going on there. But, you know, we were brought up in a different world than the last two generations. And it's not only that it's family that makes us unique and distinct when you look at us generationally, but it's the notion that we were the last generation to experience true freedom. And by true freedom, you know, I mean, we're not tethered. And the other thing that we experience that these generations don't, except in a very small capacity, is a long-lasting family. Now, I always equate it to this. If, you know, when my parents got divorced, I was like one of two kids in school. When my kids hit high school, they were like one of two kids that had their parents still together. And when you look at what that does to a human being, it, you know, creates what I call the rift in time. Everything before isn't, and everything after is different. And those differences are where all of the ills today come from.
So I think that's a super interesting hypothesis. So as I mentioned in the pre-show, I like to kind of dig in and ask questions and understand. And as you're saying that, there's two things that come to mind of like to explore on that. Let me start with the first, which is I think it's a super interesting hypothesis that, and let me play it back to you and correct me if I'm overstating it or missing it, but like if there's a problem in the world, if somebody has issues, if there's suffering occurring in some form that's human created, you know, man-made in some way, you can trace that back to a root of there was a family issue that led to that happening. Which I think for some people, they could hear that and be like, yeah, but I guess connect those dots for me in a more concrete way. Why do you feel, because it's a bold claim. I'm not saying it's not true, but it's a bold claim to say that's kind of the root of all this. What gives you, like, what are you seeing? Connect those dots for people to make it real, like mechanically, why is it the family that leads to that all the time?
In the best case scenario, just for human development, regardless of, you know, the human, it is having a mother and a father, and it is being brought up through the maturation cycle. So if you're stopped at any period along that cycle, and this is why I think it's humorous that we put so much emphasis on like psychology today, when in fact psychology is what's broken so many people. Because the family, if you have a strong family, doesn't need that sort of psychology. And granted, your parents could be screwed up. Most people have some sort of baggage they bring to the thing, the family foundation, but it's still the best case scenario for a productive human being. You know, whether that's you know, societal to the extent that you don't think marriage is a real institution today. And I would even argue that people are trying to influence younger generations away from marriage, away from the notion of procreating, even though we know today that Asia is about to suffer a massive generational collapse because they haven't been procreating. We also know that in the United States today, that there is a shortage of human beings to replace the you know, our parents effectively and us. So it really looms large when you look at it mechanically and just say, just take pure raw data. The numbers aren't there anymore. So now we're about to have, and we're going to see it play out before the United States gets impacted, but we're going to see what happens in China and Japan, where they have a lot of geriatric people and a lot of really young people. Usually that doesn't end well. You know, when you just look at it from a just business, you know, and keeping it very simple. But I could go into philosophical things like, why is you know, millennial generation have some of the high, a girlfriend of mine stated it perfectly. Why is everyone bisexual in the millennial generation? And she's one of them. And I laughed because I was going to say, you know, what the claims of homosexuality, but it really is everyone's bisexual. And, you know, and I always told my kids this, you know, the 80s were the perfect time because nobody cared. Nobody cared about politics. Nobody cared about race. Nobody cared about, you know, sex. It was a very fun time if you were our age, because it truly you were living. And now we've devolved into endless tribes and endless arguments and endless what I call the anomaly, and the anomaly being the norm versus what the real norms are, which is finding someone you care to spend your life with. Procreating, because that's what all species do. Humans have this arrogance about us that, well, we're different from other mammals. No, we're not. You know, we can do cool things comparatively, but we're not different in that regard. And then, you know, taking that notion further and having children and raising them properly and giving them discipline, hopes, dreams, arts, you know, all of the things that we experienced that are just different today. And that's where you go to some of the concrete and some of the philosophical.
Yeah, it's interesting because the reason I do this show and the reason I ask the question I ask is
if I'm being very honest, I've said this before, like I'm trying to figure out how to live in this world, which maybe is like a philosophical, like you got to get off that and just live and just and do it. But for me, like we all have value systems, we all have beliefs, we all have thoughts, we all have these things in our heads that whether we admit it or not, drive us and drive what we do. And to me, I tend to be a very logical, rational person. So my logical, rational response to that is like, okay, well, what should I value most? Like, what's the first principle of this thing that gives me guidance that allows me to say, here's how I should approach the world, here's how I should move. For many people, that's I mean, maybe not as many today, but for many people, that's God. God, whether it be whatever religion you are, told me what the value system is and how I should live. And it's a very simple, I live that way. So that's kind of how I think. Like there's a thread to it, and you're trying to trace back to the root of the thread to say, why does this belief system make sense? Why is it, you know, what it is? For you, as you're speaking, like, and often it's multiple things. It's not always just one. So for you, as you're talking about, you know, why is this so important mechanically? How does this work? It sounds like there's one part of it which is very much biological and very much just this is what animals are designed to do. It's what mammals are designed to do. We procreate. As part of that, the family dynamic in a very direct evolutionary way allows us to build and prepare people for life and to thrive and to grow. And the numbers are just such that you need a certain amount of people replenishing those that die. And there's kind of like a biological component to it. It sounds like there's also, I don't know if it's like a moralistic or like a value-driven component or whatever you would call it, of a belief that family is the best support system, the best infrastructure to allow you to have kind of like a happy, fulfilled, well-adjusted, balanced life. Like you
I
get that
believe that
stability.
it's the cornerstone
It's the cornerstone of it. So it's both of
of
those pieces of
everything.
it. And it's not just because of biologically, like that's how this thing was designed by nature. There's also more of a, I don't know what word to put on it, but there's this other aspect of it, which is beyond biology, which is just for us to be, let's just use a generic term, good people. Family is what allows you, that environment, that healthy environment allows you to thrive, to become that. Is that fair? And
Oh,
kind of playing it
without a
back to you.
doubt. And I would even argue your points are dead on. And in the book that I wrote, and this is something I've thought about a long time. And I always used to say, you know, my wife and I would joke and say I should start a boot camp for parents. And this is really where the genesis of the analog parent came from. It's how parenting has changed, you know, and I could look at the badness of what was instilled in me, but all of the good things that were are far outweigh, even though it stopped at a certain period of time, they far outweigh everything else that I've learned outside of that. You know, just the general courtesies of saying please and thank you. And it's such a novel concept. Like, when was the last time you were in a store where somebody thanked you for the business? You know, it's so uncommon, yet they want a tip for ringing up a cash register. So every societal construct has the family at its foundation. And you can easily see this by saying, all right, for those who end up in the system, in the societal system that helps, you know, broken youths and broken families, really, those people end up more screwed up because society isn't prepared to raise children. People are. Schools aren't prepared to raise children. People are. You know, a village isn't a village. You know, we've heard that really irritating phrase. A village isn't a village without having families that make up that village. It's not like kids just dropped out of the sky like the stork brought them. And then this, you know, proverbial village all of a sudden was like, well, scoop that baby up like something out of Monty Python. And let's raise this baby. No, they don't. And schools today actually even, I would even say it's further to the extent that they're not even considering the family. Like I always hear people, the argument people that I find in our generation and down, and usually are people who don't have happy marriages, are the ones who say, well, we weren't supposed to be together this long. You know, it's an outmoded, outdated, you know, marriage, blah, 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 blah. We haven't, like, there hasn't been this, and everyone wants to live forever for some reason, which I just don't understand that either. You know, since Ray Kurzweil said the singularity back in the 50s or 60s, whenever it was, it's not coming true, people. And men still die at the mean age of about 78, and actually, women have lowered. and they used to live much longer than us. No, they're not. Is that because they're happier in their families and how their choices have been made? But if you look at it, morality, I was raised Roman Catholic. I went to Catholic school for a few years. Church was a part of our life, but I'm a heathen. However, I raised my kids in the church. And it's not necessarily because I'm so worried that they won't be getting something somewhere else. I just think it's good. You know, there's nothing wrong with the Ten Commandments. Anyone who says there is probably is a little too theistic to begin with. That's why I always love atheists. They forget that the part in the thing. It's like, oh, so you want me to believe your religion. I get it. I'm like, it all kind of flows when you start looking at it and break each part down.
All right, let me ask some questions on this. And like I said in the beginning, I find things super interesting. So I like to ask questions to understand it. The questions sometimes are like probing, examining questions, but you'll understand they're never meant to like suggest something. They're really just to understand it. So let me, in that vein, let me ask a few questions. So I could see an argument that says we're oscillating here between kind of the natural state of biology and animal nature and this other state, which is more moralistic and there's more to it. Like even the idea that marriage is something sacred, right? And again, I'm not suggesting it is or isn't, but somebody could say, well, if we're using nature as our guide and it's about procreation and it's about what we need to be what we are meant to be. Marriage isn't something that we see. Certain mammals or animals, you know, have long-term relationships, but by and large, they don't. But then we're saying, like, so which one is it really? Like, how do we delineate? How do we decipher between what's our natural, true biological state, which we should embrace, versus what's this moralistic state? Because I think that's the struggle so many people have. Like, it sounds good in theory, but in practice, it's like, am I cherry picking one or the other just to be convenient for the argument, or is there actually a guide here that I should follow?
Well, and it's interesting you say it in that way, because here's how I would argue the point of mammals. Mm-hmm. Let's just keep it to the simple subspecies we belong to, or genus, whatever it is anthropologically, I don't care. The point is, we're not like chimpanzees, right? Because chimpanzees will rip each other's nuts off over a banana.
Humans do sometimes too, sadly, over ridiculous things. But I hear your point.
When we look at the worst state of humans, what do we usually refer to them as? Animals. Yet, most animals, with the exception of primates, rarely murder. Hmm. It's very, very rare, even in primates, but they do. Humans only murder. You know, when you look at it from a comparison. So the notion that humans have this detachment and attachment to nature is what cracks me up. Because the construct, and I like that you said sacred, like I would always argue things like marriage. Yeah, I'm trying not to swear. I could care less if two gay people got married. However, my dead grandma still has the right to exist within the ether and say that marriage is between a man and a woman. That is not a profound statement. And the reason that, again, we get this attachment and detachment, it's because it can only occur between a man and a woman. So marriage actually, even beyond the religious notion of sacrament in the Catholic world or of some Christians as well, but even in that notion of sacrament, you take that underlying architecture and it's about procreation. So I can make all sorts of arguments. The point is, humans don't like using the attachment to nature when it doesn't serve them. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think we're at today. For example, and I don't even want to get into this on a side issue, but we are told to disbelieve everything that has ever biologically existed in the last 10 years. And what we used to call child abuse in other countries, we're now like, well, of course you know, an 11-year-old who we all used to think was stupid, and that's why they need adults, and that's why they don't have rights until they're over 18. And even that most people question. But now we're like, well, yes, 11-year-olds are rational thinking people, and they can make life-altering changes to their existence. Now, they can't smoke cigarettes, all right? Until you can roll one up and pop one in your mouth, I don't want to hear about it. But this is the human idiocy. So I think the societal construct, I think the religious construct, and I think the natural construct all benefit from the marriage and from having a family. And that family dynamic then is something that you have to commit to at the very least forget yourselves, at the very least, because you decided to make a baby. And if I would hold any argument in truest belief is like, why do we let people have children? There should be a license for that, you know, but I'm a libertarian, so I don't ever want any form of anything telling me what to do. I can coexist, you know, like the bumper sticker says, with anyone.
So isn't there an argument to be made that, and again, I'm exploring in this, I'm thinking out loud.
Oh, like, this is great.
Like the people that, the generations prior to us, as an example, right? Just to generalize for a second, the people that would say like, everybody's bisexual, you know, you don't need the nuclear traditional family to raise a society, the norms that are in place, whether it be marriage or other gender norms, whatever it is, all that stuff, right? They're looking to throw that out. It's possible that they're still aligned to what you're saying and what you believe. It's just as humans, we're evolving to better understand and observe things and make these decisions as to where the way we've traditionally done it, or perhaps even the way it's done in nature, still makes sense, or if there's a better way. And for them, it's not that they would necessarily disagree that having some support system of people who genuinely care about your well-being or a child's well-being and teaching them, you know, some moral compass, teaching them to be kind and compassionate, teaching them to try and think logically and rationally, all the things, right? All of that can still be true, but we don't have to do it the same way we did it in the 80s or the 50s or the 20s or whatever time period, right? It's us evolving. Just like people from the 50s would look at us growing up in the 80s and say, the world is falling apart. These kids are staring at TV and video games too much, right? Two parents are working now. Like, there's always room for people to look back and say, it used to be better and now we have a problem. It's not to say that there's not some people in society today who are taking it very much to an extreme, because we're always going to have that. Some people maybe do just want anarchy, and we can argue maybe that's okay or not, but where does it become a problem? Like, why is it that people looking at it differently and saying that, you know, I think we should be more open. I think we should all be bisexual. I think we shouldn't have marriage. I think kids should be raised, you know, by anybody who loves, like all those different things. Where does the issue come in? Is it just that they're idealistic and that doesn't actually work when you break it down? Or if we're being honest, is it just like, hey, that's not the way I knew it, so just like viscerally, it feels wrong to me. Can we delineate between those two?
Did you open it up a big can? So you said something that, and you said it a couple of times now, which I agree with and have a slight nuance towards. And sure. You said support system. I think it's more than that. I think it becomes who you are. And this is, you know, as we get into crazy constructs like identity, you know, if you looked back generationally and you were to look at the, you know, even just going two generations from us, they had other concerns that were far greater. You know, what we refer to today as first world problems or third world problems, or we can't say third world. The reality is there was still survival issues. So nature had a stronger hold on the whole architecture. So it meant, you know, it was better across the board in a lot of different ways. But then when you take that societal, intellectual, emotional side to it, and you try to overlay the concepts that are being pushed, they don't work. And you can easily look at it as a measure of not working by the amount of drugs that are being given to everyone today from science. You know, I always ask people who have depression in their family, I'm like, well, what happened? Like, when do you stop? You know, and I ask this always, I studied this, you know, and thought I really wanted to help people. And it was more, I either wanted to help kids or I wanted to see what really fucked up crazy people were like. So my interests are abnormal and child. But what I realized was the field was horrific because only three types of people went into it. Those who were good listeners and, you know, want to help people. Those who were really trying to find themselves, which is the majority. And then freaks like me who just wanted to see freaks. But if you look at those people and you ask them, when do you stop? You know, when does the human condition and the natural condition just become the condition? You know, and people who have depression in their family are like, well, you'd have a whole bunch of suicides. I'm like, well, no, you wouldn't, because the data doesn't support your analysis. So what happens when you take off all of these SSRIs that people are on and benzodiazepines and then forget of the plethora of other drugs? You know, the Brave New World nailed it. So if I had an insidious nature, I would say those who push the destruction of the family on an institutional level want power, because the family is the only thing that keeps you from that. If you don't have solid families, you don't have people pushing back and going, well, shouldn't my sister be a whore? Well, no, that's your sister. You don't like I always told my kids this, when you leave my house, I don't care. It's your life at that point. You know, they think I'm this massive control freak, but no, I'm just a guy and I'm keeping you from hitting that third rail of life. But if you don't have that, you will hit that third rail. And I hit that third rail multiple times to the extent that I could have been in prison. My whole life would have been different. Every outcome that I have today would have changed. And that's just life decisions. But if my father were around, I guarantee you my ass would have been beaten a few times, probably more than a few times. And not that I am for beatings, but they do bring you back to reality pretty quickly in terms of what you think.
Yeah.
So support system really is who you are. The who you aren't is all of the institutionalized thoughts that get pushed. And where would you be from the, hey, look in the past and how much better? Well, if you're not happy today, which most children of the Z's and the millennials aren't, and if you're riddled with drugs from a very early age on, whether that's Adderall, you know, the other one, everyone thinks they have ADHD. Like, really? Really? Everyone does now? Everyone? No, you're lying to yourself. And lying, I think, is at the heart of all things.
Yeah.
Because you're lying to yourself to say that you don't think how nature designed things is how it should be. And only humans do that. And I'm not saying it's perfect. That's the whole point. We're flawed. Mm-hmm. We are the most flawed, I would argue, in nature. However, in the most flawed existence, this still creates the best human beings.
Well, you said a word which I love, and is such an important word in all of these types of conversations, nuance. Because I think a big part of the problem we have in discussions like this, or people just looking at topics like this or having their viewpoints, is not appreciating and understanding that nuance is at play. And I think an illustration of that is as you're speaking, right? Like, there's some people that would listen to what you're saying and think, you monster, right? There's a group of people who have a different mindset who think like, you, this is
exactly. Who is this 85-year-old?
Right. Exactly. And vice versa, right? There's people that would look at those people and be like, what the hell are you talking about? This is crazy. And I think the nuance comes in because some of the things, like the importance of the nuclear family is a perfect example of that, right? It's become this binary thing where people look at it and like, if you agree with that statement, you must be, and I don't know you from this conversation, so I'm not proclaiming, but like, you must be a Trump supporting religious fanatic conservative who's racist and hates everybody because you think the nuclear family is important, right? Versus if you don't think the nuclear family is important, you're obviously must be this leftist, liberal, progressive who's trying to destroy the family life and destroy humanity and all the things, right? And Nuance says, like, no, the nuclear family can be important, but also maybe there's other things that can be adjusted and changed that can be fixed, right? So that Nuance piece becomes important. So with that said, let me go down this kind of track of it. Okay. How do we know we're not, you know, just those older people who think my generation was the best and the way we did it was great, right? You said it before, like the 80s was the best time, right? Nobody gave a shit about politics or race or sex or whatever. And I think that too. I grew up in the 80s, so I find myself thinking that way. But how do we know we're not lying to ourselves? How do we know we're not just looking at it and assuming that, you know, the way, because somebody look at it and say, that grew up in the 80s and be like a Black person can join this call and be like, whoa, hold on, dude. I grew up in the 80s. It wasn't all that great. Like I went through a lot of tough stuff, or a gay person or a woman or a poor person. Like, how do we know we're not just looking at it through our bubble? And again, the nuance there, that's not to say that everything we did in the 80s was bad. There was inevitably a lot of good stuff that happened in the 80s in terms of how we parented, how we raised kids, how we treated the family, that we should continue today. But if there's some people out there looking at it saying, but not all of it was good, it actually caused a lot of problems. Maybe you and I didn't feel it as much, but it did cause problems. So we need to adjust. How do we know that we're not just being like, no, don't change anything. Everything about the 80s was absolutely perfect. And we're kind of like demonizing the other side when in reality, they're just like, no, we're trying to evolve. We're trying to get.
I would argue it might not have been perfect if you include the fashion.
But... Fair enough.
But the music as a kid, when half his head shaved and long hair on one side, and yeah, maybe some parachute pants in there. So that gets back to that is actually the foundational piece of my book. Mm. Every chapter ends with basically a synopsis of the chapter, but it's called normal versus not normal. And this is not nuance. There is a normality to human beings. Mm. And it encompasses pretty much every aspect of humanity. Where we live today, that the normal is, are on the fringes. And what we consider not normal is in the good old boob or the bell curve. But that covers everything. That's why you see, and this gets, again, you listed out everything. He's going to be this, you know, crotchety, religious, Trump supporting, you know, archaic individual. I'm not looking back. My childhood wasn't good to the extent that it ended. So I'm telling you, it's not that my generation was perfect. It's that we had freedom. And the kids today don't have freedom. They're spoon-fed everything that they think. This is evil. That's another part of the book.
The phone, because, by the way, for people just listening. We're referencing the phone.
Oh, sorry.
Anybody just listening. Yeah, yeah.
Keep getting. If you had, and I tell my kids this, if you had to read a book for every idea that you think you have, you would find your ideas are much different. But you read a snippet and you hear a snippet of a snippet from an expert, which I don't know where critical thinking is anymore, because I'm just as smart as any human being. And I expect all of my other human beings to feel the same way about themselves. Yet, if you vote for someone, that doesn't set your political, or it actually shouldn't define your political nature. If you have an opinion, you should always be open to having that opinion changed. If you have an argument, your argument should be based on sound, reasonable thesis of facts, not speculation, not feelings, not emotions. Because to your point, it wasn't that the 80s were that great, to the extent that, yeah, somebody could say they walked down the street and somebody yelled faggot. Ah, our words hurting me now. See, we didn't get hurt by words. And the same would apply if somebody said that to a Black person in a different way. See, but you can't even say that now. Why? Can I not listen to rap music now? This is how ignorant humans are.
But is it possible, Tony? Let me just ask on that point. And this is where I honestly, I don't know. I struggle with this. Like somebody, nuance, right? Nuance comes in again. Somebody would hear that and say like, yeah, you're right, right? Like just saying the word in the 80s, it wasn't as big of a deal. It's not about that. But I could see somebody coming back and saying, again, firstly, which there's truth to this. It's not the be all end all answer. But firstly, who the hell are you two guys to say it? Two white guys who grew up in the 80s, who assumingly are heterosexual, like to pass a judgment on how that word impacted that gay person or how a word might impact a black person. We don't actually know. And it's wrong of us to assume that it wasn't that big of a deal. But more importantly than that, maybe I could also see an argument that says, yeah, the word in and of itself, not a huge deal. But it's the way that it permeates throughout the culture and society where it was just somewhat normalized. That's the issue, right? It allowed for so much suffering that occurred. And we're missing that by taking this approach that like the way we're handling, like we're discrediting the fact that there's people that today that are well-intentioned that are like, I just want to fix that problem. I don't want that gay person to have to walk down the street and suffer in that way. And maybe they're not getting it right, right? Maybe we're trying to piece together and it's a little bit of trial and error and some people are going too far and they're focusing on the wrong things. But at its core, it's this sense of like, hey, we're just trying to make things better. And we're getting like angry at it and getting annoyed at it and thinking like that's the problem. But what if that's true? What if they are actually approaching it, trying to get to a better outcome in that way?
Well, see, and this is the overstated and obvious argument that gets back to the notion of reality doesn't matter anymore.
Mm.
It doesn't. So you can have somebody who is in politics, who blatantly lies, is on video lying, and then is called out for their lies, and they lie again and say that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually well past nuance. We're into clown universe, where nothing is real and nothing is sacred and nothing is normal.
Mm.
So you made some points. What about getting rid of words that hurt people's feelings? Well, I was called a faggot a lot in the 80s because I had some little eyeliner and some crazy long hair. And on Halloween, I wore a dress once. Again, normal covers a lot. I wasn't gay. It was the 80s. It was just a weird fucking time. 70s weren't any different. And if you looked at promiscuity and things like that, STDs became more relevant in the 80s. And that slowed everyone down. But all they're really saying is they want to engineer utopia or perfection.
Mm-hmm.
Reason utopia means not a real place or this place doesn't exist, whatever the definition is, and why perfection is a goal, not a destination. Because every single time, everyone, that there has been engineering involved in societies, bad things happen.
Usually, yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that.
Tens of millions of people dying.
I agree.
And for that fact to always be overlooked when somebody says, well, don't say retard. It's like, when was the last time in your entire life have you heard somebody saying retard and you rounded a corner? And there's clearly a retarded person and some full-grown adult going, you fucking retard, you retard. That never happens. You know when it's used? When you and your friends are drinking and somebody does something really stupid and you call them a retard. Or in IT, like we have people who are off the charts smart, we call them retard smart because they have that plane of like where it's like, wow, your wiring is so different. So a word is just a word. And the simple notion that somebody wants to engineer a word out of existence is easily proven, and I show it in the book. We used to call what were called retarded people back in the 70s, because that's a clinical definition. It just meant slower than, like the word retard means in music. When you see R-I-T-A-R-D, you slow down. All it meant was a certain IQ level. We used to use moron, cretin, and I believe imbecile as psychologically developed periods Does anybody care if you're called an imbecile today? Do we have to get rid of the word moron? And then on top of that, it's that belief system that somehow calling someone handy capable makes them feel better. You know who knows they're the retarded person? The retarded person. Because they see everything that they're different. Just like if a black kid grew up in an all-white neighborhood, he would see it differently. That doesn't mean you erase the perspective, but it doesn't mean you try to model society to avoid all pain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because pain is just life.
Pain's life. You're right. You're right. And I'll say this.
It's one endless kick in the crotch after another. That's life.
That's accurate. Well, and I'll say this. I think, to be fair, I do think, because I have this conversation with my wife a lot too, I think there probably are people who have been hurt by the word retarded. I'm sure there are situations where somebody, you said, and I know you're just telling the story, but like it never happens. I'm sure it happens. I'm sure just like people have used the N-word or homosexual insults, like there are people who use mean terms to hurt people.
Yes.
So I'm sure it does happen, right? It may not have happened to us, but I'm sure it does happen. But that's not your point. I know that's not your point. Your broader point is, I think, the more important one, which is, you're right. I think there are people that are trying to engineer utopia. And there's certain people that believe if we just got rid of these words, and maybe they even recognize that it's not just the word, it's the meaning behind it. It's the implication. It's what I was saying before, the fact that it permeates throughout culture, right? They think we can fix that and we can get to a perfect state. And I agree with you. I tend to take a very cynical view of the world and of humanity. I actually think there is no utopia. There is no perfect state. I think the implication of that statement, though, is that people are always going to have to suffer. There are going to be people who, quote unquote, lose out for a period of time. Black people, gay people, mentally handicapped people in general, whatever, all different people at all different times, right? You can, and Italians, all different, Irish, you can go down the list. That, if that's an inconvenient truth that we have to accept, that in society, there's always going to be people that suffer, that are worse off and other people are going to be better off. The big dilemma, and this is where my cynicism comes from, of like, how do we decide that? Because some people would look at the world today and say white straight males are now falling into that category, right? You can't just say whatever you want anymore. You have to be the one that has to feel uncomfortable, that has to feel like this world doesn't fit for me anymore, because we're moving on. And now it's a more open place for people that are gender, you know, fluid, or are bisexual, or don't believe in the nuclear family, right? And now you have to be the one to suffer and live in a world that doesn't fit in that way. And I don't know where we go with that, because if it is a truth, which I think it sounds like you agree with, that there is no perfect utopia, people are always going to have to suffer. Maybe our utopia was in the 80s and it wasn't for other people, and now it's just shifting. What do we do with that? Like, could somebody hear this conversation and say, you're trying to hold on to you being not the one suffering. You want to hold on to that period where life made sense for you and it all fit. I'm not saying that's the truth, but maybe it is. And maybe now it's just time for us to take our medicine and other people get to feel like the world is better designed for them. Is that possible?
This gets into the notion of what I just said before, which is, can you construct something? So you brought up a good point. There are probably assholes out there that use words intentionally to hurt people. And I've probably done it, and so have you.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
In the course of our lifetimes, you are never a perfect person. You are a flawed person. And this isn't even biblical, but Christianity kind of has that as the whole
premise.
You're made perfected, you know, perfected in God's eyes. And if you have that relationship, which is where I always struggle. But the notion that people suffer is where this world has gone sideways. Because when they hung 30 to 40 Italians in Louisiana because they were considered niggers, not the N-word, that's what they called us back then. And my dad, who's 100% and is brown, yeah, I get it. But again, that's just a point in time. Like I said, the 80s isn't perfection to the extent that it's something I'm holding on to. It's because I saw what happened when the destruction of the family moved forward. When you remove that cornerstone, the whole foundation starts getting wobbly. Then you throw in the evil of technology, and information being malleable, just hardcore truths being malleable. That's black. No, it's gray. You know, and everything has a gray area. You will never, you will never achieve utopia. You will never achieve perfection. And you certainly won't achieve basic dialogue and humanity. Because again, to hold a thought, you actually have to have researched that thought. To then argue that thought, you have to be open to an argument in return. That's the problem. The family is, where would you have these concepts? At the dinner table. Kids were allowed to ask stupid questions. They actually called you out here and there as a parent, be like, why did you do this, Dad? Why did you do that, Mom? And then you have to look at yourself and go, ah, through the eyes of babes. You know, they pick up on nuance that isn't fed to them, but they feel it. So yes, people suffer. Life is not fair. There is no such thing as equal outcomes. There is only equal opportunity. That's why there's only ever been three republics since the history of all civilizations, because freedom, which is what really demarks our generation, was freedom. The freedom to say whatever you wanted, to not be annihilated for being an idiot, doing things that probably, and that's why I love, you know, I always love being in the position of feeling like I'm the prude. Mm-hmm. I'm like, since when did that happen? I'm the guy who broke laws, who was promiscuous, who didn't find any, who didn't really have a moral compass. Yet when somebody just tries to throw out something completely irrational, like you could be trans species. And 10 years ago, when you make that argument, people were like, is that really going to happen? Well, there was one trans guy in the town I grew up in. Everybody knew who he was because he looked like a linebacker with boobs. And before, everyone would go, oh, that poor person. He's suffering. You know, mean people would, you know, run him down and make fun of him. I feel bad for the real trannies, which are dudes who like to dress up as women. Those guys can't even come out anymore and be like, I just like women's clothes. I'm not gay. I'm not planning to flop my junk off. You know, I'm just in between. Where do I fit? And that's the problem. Everyone tries to avoid the fact that most of it fits here because humans like to think they're special. And when you look at what's been written, it's already been written. This book that I wrote isn't new. It's old. It's old and it's simple. The only new thing is the ability to surveil humanity through technology. And that surveillance is the permeation of every nuance and every anomaly and everything. And when you know you're being recorded right now, not because you clicked record and made the physical choice to, but because, and I don't know what kind of phone you have, but if it's an Android, Google is listening to us right now. It's not only doing that, but it's recording everything we're saying right now. Why do you record information ad infinitum? Well, to use it. You know, the old joke was, you know, if you were in IT, you know, if you subscribe to Google, you know, you're the product. You know, and that's the reality. But when you record information and coalesce it where it can be indexed and can be brought up, there's where you have the weird reality we live in today. Why is that a bad thing? Well, that's how people end up in prisons against their will because they were recorded by, you know, every dictator would have loved Google.
Sure.
Everyone. So there is no fairness. Yeah. You know, just like you can be born into a silver spoon, and that's the other side of the coin. You know, last I looked, celebrities who have lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of fortune and money and what should be the perfect situation still seem like a miserable bunch of people. And they don't seem happy. And that's another characteristic you can easily put into the mark of normality is general happiness. Because if you're generally happy, you're not going to care if somebody calls you something. You're going to go, well, he's an asshole. You know, maybe his dad beat him. You know, you're gonna make an excuse for that person's poor gesture. And the other thing that's lacking in the ingredient of humanity today, which all stems from the family, is shame and humility. You know, we like to talk about it in a movie, shame, shame, but the movie showed you exactly where we're at today. That wasn't true shame, it was manufactured shame. And you had to run the gauntlet and have tomatoes thrown at you because you were marked as the bad person. And there's no humility when you are the bad person to go, wow, I made a mistake. I'm truly sorry for that mistake. Let's move on. It won't happen again because there is no moving on. And then the reverse happens all the time where only certain people can say things, where certain people can do things that we all know are wrong and get away with it. When was the last time a politician was arrested and convicted? That should tell everyone, regardless of your precious political beliefs, that no one is actually your representative anymore. No one. And if you believe in the system, what you should believe in is that little piece of paper that was written down by a bunch of horrible white slave owning, pot smoking bastards until you actually read the words. And the words depict an idea that before the Magna Carta didn't exist. Even the other republics didn't have the freedoms that we had. And the negative, what is it called? The negative, whatever. You know, the government is not supposed to touch us. This Bill of Rights or the Ten Commandments is really about what the government can't do. That is what we should believe in, but it's not being taught anymore.
Interesting. It's complicated, and I think the freedom point is an important one because I think it's hard to dispute that when you look at the technology the way it is today, the way it's used by kids and adults for that matter, you look at that whole picture, and I think the freedom piece of it, there's a lot of truth to that. And I think where I struggle the most with, and maybe I'll make this the last kind of question line of questioning, is I guess it goes back to that nuance point because I think that's true. I think there's an issue with freedom. I think inevitably there are people right now who have bad ideas or at least ideas that can cause harm that they're trying to implement, and ego gets involved and lack of humility and overconfidence and virtue signaling and all different things get involved that lead to decisions that are bad decisions. Without a doubt, that's the truth. It's always been that way. That's always been the truth. Where I struggle is the confidence to feel like I know that things from the past were necessarily better. And I say that, and I know I keep harping on that point. And I say that only because, like, as you're explaining it, like when you grew up, right? The thought of being prude now is kind of crazy, right? You were promiscuous, you wore eyeliner, wore a dress for Halloween, it was the 80s, all that
I
stuff.
broke the law.
You broke the law, right? Inevitably, there was people that were 40, 50 years old when you were doing that were like, see, this is the problem. This is why society is crumbling. This is evidence that this is becoming a disaster. But at that moment, you would have, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, would have looked and said, no, like you're missing it. You don't get it. You come from a different time. This isn't like you view that time as evidence of when things were at their greatest. And that's that thing I can't reconcile. Like, for you individually, how do you look at that and feel confident to say, when I look at the kids today doing their version of being promiscuous, breaking the law, wearing a dress, I could see that as a problem, but it wasn't when I did it. And let me one other point to that, right? Like you mentioned the Italians that were hung. I think it's a beautiful example because let's remove race from it for a second because race becomes really complicated. To the overall premise and the hypothesis that the family is at the core of this, right? If we had the nuclear family, if people sat down
Black
at the dinner
families,
table,
Asian
right,
families,
all families, right?
white families, which used to be called Italian or Polish
Exactly.
or
Right, right, right.
German.
So all these things, right? People were harmed. So people were getting harmed then, right? But we had the nuclear family then. The people that were doing a lot of that harming, that were causing a lot of the suffering, they didn't have cell phones. They had more of the freedom we speak about. The nuclear family was much more in vogue and much more traditional. They sat down for dinner. Religion, even Christian virtues, were much more prevalent back then, and all these things. Yet people were still getting hung from trees. So I don't say that to say life was disastrous back then. Everything needs to change. I say it just for ourselves to pressure test our own thinking, to be like, if the family was so much at the core of it and the phones are so much the problem, why was there still so much suffering and ugliness in the world then? Because I think some people look at that and they say the family is important, but there's also some bad things about it, and because it still caused problems. I don't know. Like, what do you do with that? How do you feel confident that the family is at the core of it when the family was at its prime, we still saw a lot of ugliness in the world?
Well, largely because my grandma loved me. And even though I was a freaky kid, my parents still loved me. And even though I did a lot of the things that I did, and this is the clear demarcation point,
mm-hmm.
I knew that what I was doing in a lot of ways was reactionary. I had a music theory professor tell me that once. If you look the way you look, then expect something in return. And he was right. So I knew what I was doing was reactionary. I knew what I was doing was wrong. And I would even argue the nuance a little more slight and go, my grandparents wouldn't have wanted to go back to the generation of no refrigeration. So, you know, the problem we have, and this is where I think your nuance gets stuck, is complacence, which is brought about by comfort. So we still had some discomfort because freedom is discomforting, you know, but it also has some huge benefits, like no one had cameras. So all of your bad things that you did weren't publicized to the world, and they also weren't judged by the mob. They were judged by your family. And that is why your family is really who you are, not a support group, because just like, even though my family broke up, disappointing my parents was always, you know, I felt horrible. You know, I like that. So it's not that it's the better, because there are a lot of things that the earlier generations would argue are much better, like women getting, you know, being able to vote. Some women might actually go, actually, it was kind of better before.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of women go, well, it's kind of better now. But again, that's not the nuance. The nuance that we have right now is that everybody lies. Very few people speak the truth, and too many people believe their own bullshit. Because, you know, as Mike Tyson said, you know, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. That was life. That was humility. That was shame. That were all of the things that were built in. Parenting today is about protecting your little cocoon bug and making sure that nothing ever hurts them. Why don't parents have, or kids have, more chores today than they used to? Why? You know, you're not teaching responsibility. You're not even teaching that you could get your feet chopped off if you put them too close to a lawnmower blade. So when you're cocooned like that, throw in the evil of technology, it's not the nuance. You're just brainwashed. Again, if your library was actually like the internet, it would have a pile of books in the middle of the room when you walked in, and the librarian, not Dewey Decimal System, but the librarian would be like, that's mm-hmm. the book you want to read, because that's what the internet is. But if you have to actually research something, and you have to read opposing thoughts, and you have to think outside yourself, which is, I think, the fundamental thing we had that is lacking today, and isn't a generational thing because the other generations before us had it, it was curiosity. That's why I'm able to look back and go, well, I understand what Black people went through. I have a lens into it in my own family. I understand what gay people went through, and I think it's wrong. But do I think that two dads or two moms versus a mom and a dad is better in a family equation? No, because that's just natural. Because you can't, in nature, if you're gay, procreate. So if you're left to the fundamental laws and physics of your realm, you're lying to yourself. You couldn't do that. But humans don't like nature when it doesn't suit them. That's the, you know, again, the conundrum of humanity. And we're just at this point where there's now almost two generations. And I think we're starting to see some pushback, like when all of the kids realized, and maybe it was 2016, that Creepy Bill was kind of creepy. And I think there were a few memes in there, yet we were the ones who were like, well, you know, would you want to mop that versus, you know, the access he had to an intern? Like, so did I think he should be impeached? No. Voted for him once. Wrote myself in several times because I think I'm just as smart as any human being on this planet. And that's the problem. Is nobody has their own self-worth identified, because your self-worth usually comes from your family. Your support system usually comes from your family, which defines that. And then you kind of roll and grow with that. And you get to see from your family a lot of the mistakes in life that are out there. But absence of that, you're just being told. And everything is a lecture. And no one has free thought. And I would take every ugly, like I would take every murder, every horrifying humanity thing in the perfect world of freedom without surveillance, because immediately things become localized and immediately good people come to the forefront.
Super interesting, Tony. I mean, I think we could probably talk about this for hours.
And hours, days.
Right? I think people should. And I think these are the conversations, right? This is the type of exploration. It's messy. It's uncomfortable at times. Some people get offended, right? It's all this stuff. But I think the premise of it is the key one. Our ability to question, not just what we see, but ourselves, our thoughts, our beliefs, put them in through this type of conversation. But what about this? Does this make sense? Does this add up? It's the only hope we have. And I agree with you that we are flawed. So it's going to be really hard, even still, even if we are intelligent, it's going to be hard to spot our own bullshit. It's going to be hard to spot where it's something that it's, you know, is it logical? Is it rational? Is it ego? All those things. But I think these conversations go a long way towards it. So I thank you a ton for having it, for being open.
Oh, I appreciate for having
this exploration.
Imagine being able to have a conversation where you challenge the thoughts and you walk away completely happy that you met another person, whether or not their thoughts were different from yours.
Almost better if they're not, because then you get to it's good, man. Well, Tony, thank you. I'll put a link, obviously. I mentioned it in the intro to the book and to all that if people want to hear more about it. But I appreciate you for having the conversation.
No, and likewise. And I thank you very much for this. This has been great.
Awesome. Have an awesome rest of your day.
All right, you too.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks a ton for listening to the episode. I really do appreciate everybody that listens. And I think it's super cool that people want to hear conversations like this. They want to hear us talk about values and different perspectives and really just philosophical thinking. I'm kind of on this mission or journey to bring philosophy back to the forefront, maybe even make philosophy cool again. Because I just think there's so much value in thinking about our thinking, questioning and challenging ourselves more, pondering these big picture questions about life. So in that spirit, I'm trying to expand that mission a little bit. And I created a Patreon account that would be awesome if you check out. I'll put the link in the show notes. It's pretty simple, though. It's patreon.com/what's the value. And the idea is for people that maybe want to learn more about philosophy, dip their toe in it a little bit, or maybe you already love it and just want to get more of it, check it out. Because there's kind of a tier for everybody, whether you just want to get like a quick philosophical video or a thought of the day. Maybe you want to email or text me some questions and get some thoughtful philosophical responses. Or if you want to have a live one-on-one chat over Zoom. We're even doing group discussions where we kind of do group philosophical debates and discussions and ponder some of those big questions. So check it out. See if it's something you might be interested in. As I said, I just love to bring more philosophy into our lives, and I thought this might be a cool way to do it. Whether that's your thing or not, and you're into Patreon or not, I really do appreciate a ton that you listen and check out these episodes. So I appreciate it greatly, and I hope you have an awesome day.